From American Awakening, this is Signs of Life.
Hello, 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 everyone out there. This is American Awakening. You found most of your American Awakening crew, although some key members are missing, JK and Pastor Joel. They're traveling right now, both of them headed to where Brother Calvin and I are. We are in Nashville today. We'll talk to you guys a bit more about why later, but we are on the ground. We've got a pretty big American Awakening event that we're going to be filming live here that hopefully you all will get to see in the next couple of weeks. It'll be really cool. We're excited about that. But while we are getting settled and again sort of getting back into the swing of things, it feels like it's been forever since I've seen you guys. Andrew, it's been like a whole week, so good to see you back. But anyway, yes, all we're going to start it off like we always do with a little JBJ. What you got for us this morning?
Fast from the swelling darkness, feast on the power of his light. Fast from discontentment, feast on the joy that he brings. A sustainer, protector, the well of life, my helper, my comfort, the bread of life is you. From the fear that haunts us, feast on the power of his mind. Fast from the trap of judgment, feast on all that's been redeemed. Sustainer, protect the well of life, my helper, my comfort, the bread of life is you. Sustainer, protector, well of life, my helper, my comfort, bread of life. Sustainer, protector, well of life, my helper, my comfort, bread of life.
Today on our show, we're going to be talking about where do we go from here? How do we move forward? But before we get to Brother Andrew, who'll be talking about that more, taking us through it, let's get Brother Jeff with something to chew on today. What you got for us?
Yes, I'm going to do a little Joel combination too. It's perfect because what I wanted people to chew on today is also, we're going to take us back to Sunday school a little bit. This is something I was talking about with the kids and I thought it was pertinent to all of us. And that's the armor of God. So me and the kids have been chatting about that, thinking about that. And If you're not familiar with that, it's a passage in the end of Ephesians, a book, a little letter that Paul wrote in the New Testament that if you did grow up in church, you might have some kind of a knowledge of at a surface level. But it says a couple things that I think are really interesting. Before it gets into what the actual armor is, it makes this connotation, or I mean, it makes this note that I think is really important for Christians in this time right now. And it says that our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers and against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Another translation says the principalities. And I think first I want to start there that, man, if a Christian misses that, we tend to start fighting the wrong battles. We tend to start, if you don't make the evil realm outside of our, you know, visual existence, the actual true evil, then you have a propensity to make humans or the opposition or someone of another country or someone of another skin color or someone of another thought, you tend to make them the enemy. And so I really like to push hard on there for a second for a lot of people, because anyone who tends to dehumanize another person and claims any level of Christianity usually is doing a swap right there that's very wrong to the level of almost idolatrous, that you do not actually, you're not fighting the right battle. You're not naming the actual right evil. You're not fighting against the proper right thing. And then the second thing, if you know the text, and it goes on, so I won't read it word for word, but goes on to then say then that to extinguish the arrows of the enemy, to extinguish this, we have to put on armor. And that's like the breastplate of righteousness and the shield of faith and all these different types of things. But one note I made to the kids is that, do you notice when it goes into the belt and the helmet and the shield and the breastplate, it never says that there's any armor for your back. There's only armor kind of facing like a soldier would forward, right? And I made that note to the kids to kind of just talk about the fact that God will protect you. God will completely equip you, but you have to be facing the battle. You have to be facing the enemy. The minute you pretend the enemy doesn't exist, the minute you pretend the evil is not the evil that you believe it is and you turn your back to it, the minute you're drastically exposed. And so I can go on and on, but those kind of two points of, are you naming the right evil, right? The actual curse of sin and the evil one. And I could go on and on. There's one of my favorite points about the Satan, I like to call him, that a lot of people miss in evangelicalism, is Satan has no actual proper name, by the way, right? That's one of my favorite little Bible trivias, is we call him Satan, but any name he has in scripture is just a descriptor. The Satan, which means the accuser, the one that some people try to say is his name, Lucifer, is actually just a translation of falling from the stars from the Latin Vulgate. But what I love about that is he's anti-creation. Notice how God has the principle of only giving things names that are from the created order, and the very being of anti-creation doesn't have a name. It's almost like he's not even above, he's not even worthy of a name because he's so anti-creation. And only things that push towards flourishing and creation get a name. So that's something to think about today and something to chew on today. Are you calling the right enemy? And are you actually facing the right way in that battle? So that's something to chew on. Back to you guys.
Thank you for that, Jeff. It's interesting to hear about you talking to your small kids, because your kids are small, you know, about spiritual battles and about, you know, what you're fighting against really isn't flesh and blood. Yeah. Or like, do you feel like your kids... How do your kids sort of deal with that? Are they like following it? Really, this, like, it's not about like what you see, it's about something else. And then my follow-up really was just about like, is it, you feel like there's nothing covering your back because God's got your back?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's both. I mean, I think I'm making the point that when you're not paying attention to the battle, you're exposed. But I also agree. Yeah, at the end of the day, God protects you and surrounds you and comes all around you. So I do love that. But no, yeah, I mean, our oldest is six, and so that's not too old. But yeah, she totally, I think, gets it and understands. And I think our kids are more wired for the meta narrative of what life is more than we think, because they haven't been entrenched in the Western consumer narrative as much, or the, you know, like everyone gets sucked into a narrative. And it's not a coincidence that kids, boys and girls, usually, at least ours, tend to have all this language of big narratives and battles and fights and the dolls and the Legos and the dogs and the, you know, and it's all this stuff. And so I think there's something there that doesn't mean that I obviously know the complex layers of good and evil, but it provides a space where I think that we're story driven, and this is a really compelling story. And so I think as long as you keep it in that context, our kids tend to get it. And then it gives them good framework too, when they see something, to not label it a certain way, but to understand what's going on, like in the invisible realm, you know?
Guys, I'd love to hear from you. I mean, do you think we have a problem as believers remembering that, you know, the battle is not against flesh and blood? Is it because, you know, what, we have some years on us as opposed to the kids, and, you know, we're not as tightly, you know, connected to, I don't know, like the spiritual realm or things that are not what we see? Or do you think, like, we know it, we just, like, we're just cynical. We just don't believe it. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
It's hard. You know, like, you think of the story of Bonhoeffer. You know, he smacked that right in the middle of Nazi Germany. And so what I think he was faced with the situation, I think he also probably recognized that the battle, the true battle being fought, was not of flesh and blood. But what do you do when you are faced with a physical manifestation of what seems to be evil and dark? You know, I think that's where I think the older we get, the more mature we get, the more we see in the world, it does become increasingly challenging, right? Because, like, yes, you might be fighting fear or despair or something like that. Yet what happens when there is someone who is perpetuating that within the world?
And how do we? I think they're not mutually exclusive. It's just that you have to see the power behind the power. It's almost like puppeting power, you know? Mm. And I think we see that in the first century, super clear, right? That Israel, you know, had an enormous problem with Rome, wanted to crush Rome and Caesar and all that stuff. But Jesus obviously said, no, it's the power of sin behind that, the empire, right? Now, he said there's sin in yourself, but there's also sin in them. And so, like, it wasn't like they still had the same goal at some level, right? Like, Jesus still critiqued and calls down at the power of empire. But he wasn't saying it in the same way that his counterparts were in regard to this is the ultimate problem. You know, and Bonhoeffer is a good example that I think very similarly. I mean, you know, with his ethics, what's his framework was that, you know, everything has to be passed through the need of one's neighbor and then the model of Jesus. And so those are the two basically only filters you can have of something's ethical or not. And I still think even those questions show that that's a larger spiritual nature of seeing things, right?
I don't think it's not always clear cut what that means we do, right, in any one given situation.
Totally.
But I think Christianity it matters because it's hard, not because it's easy. And I think the thing that in the Gospels that is transformative, that shifts everything, is when Jesus says, you know, you've been told to love your neighbors and hate your enemies. And I'm telling you, no, you love your enemies. You pray for people who persecute you. And I think that's really fun and easy to do when you're feeling safe and secure. It's a lot harder to do when your enemy wants to kill you. And I think that's what, I mean, is so remarkable about the civil rights movement, for instance, is it lived that for decades, you know, in the face of terror. And I think that is the most Christian thing there is.
I think oftentimes we can blur those lines, and we don't want to hope that someone evil can change. And so sometimes we think we can take vengeance on our own, you know, against something that's evil. Because we're sinners, the lines do get blurred. And that's why God said, do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, because we blur that line often as human beings, and that God is the only one that knows where the line's at.
This is good, because I feel like this is definitely going to come back with what Andrew's talking about later. And really, in this moment that we're in, with everything that we're fighting against, everything that we're struggling against, mm-hmm. how do we stay focused on real problems and not just people who seem like they're embodying the problem? Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, I'd love to hear from Calvin. What's happening out there now, bro? What's happening?
Yes, ma'am. All right. Yeah, we just want to bring you a few headlines of what's going on out there. The World Health Organization has warned the coronavirus pandemic is accelerating and pointed to a record 183,000 increases in new coronavirus cases globally on Sunday. The HWO's director general said that the virus is in a new and dangerous phase as it keeps spreading in the American South and West, and it's spiking in South America, South Asia, and the Middle East. Cases are increasing in 81 different countries and at the same time declining in 36 others. And on Sunday, the U.S. reported over 25,000 new cases, according to Johns Hopkins University. Also, a rising number of young people are testing positive for coronavirus in southern U.S. states, where new cases continue to shatter records, including in Florida and Texas, with officials blaming a lack of social distancing as well as increased testing. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis warned more people in their 20s and 30s are testing positive, and are mostly asymptomatic. He said at a press conference the other day, and I quote, "Our cases are shifting in a radical direction younger. Infections are also on top among young people in parts of Texas and Georgia, according to local health officials who reported similar trends. And on Friday, officials in South Carolina warned that a rising number of people under 30 are testing positive for coronavirus, with an official at the local Department of Health saying that the rise shows that, and I quote again, younger people are not taking social distancing seriously. And lastly, a noose was found in the garage stall of Daryl Bubba Wallace Jr. and the number 43 Richard Petty Motorsports team Sunday at the Talladega Super Speedway. Now, NASCAR released a statement about it Sunday night saying, "We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. We have launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify the person or persons responsible and eliminate them from the sport. So we have stated unequivocally there is no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all." So in his third full-time season at NASCAR's top level, Wallace is the only black driver in the Cup Series and has been integral in leading the sport's recent commitment to fighting racism and injustice. His largest impact so far was calling for NASCAR to ban the Confederate flag from all events, which the governing body did on June 10th. So there you have it, a few stories of what is going on out there. And now for our next segment, over to our brother and friend from the One America Movement, Andrew Hanauer, for hashtag Love Yo Neighbor.
How's everyone doing? It's so good to be with you. Thanks, Calvin, for the intro, and thanks for all that information. It's great to be with you all. I want to talk today a little bit about how we move forward together. You know, we're having quite the year here in the United States. We've got probably the most divisive election, presidential election in at least 160 years. We've got a global pandemic, and we've got obviously a huge national focus on the continued injustice and racism in our society. I want to read a quick paragraph, actually, that my colleague Chandra Westain wrote about the coronavirus recently. "What is going to keep us safe, to advance a healthy society and keep us working toward a just and active peace in this country, is the relationships we build with one another. It is the way we support each other and listen to each other to become close enough to allow the pain of our neighbor to resonate within us so deeply that we cannot look away from it." And I want to talk about that concept of people's pain, because I think there's a lot of pain in this country right now, and there's a lot of pain that's manifesting in different ways. I don't know if you all remember the period of time just before the virus really kind of hit here in the U.S., right before people started closing schools and going into quarantine. It was sort of this weird lull before the storm. And I remember one of the things I did during that time was I went to my daughter's first Little League practice. My daughter is 10, and she's in a Little League where there are 50 kids in the league, and there are 49 boys and my daughter. And I'm so incredibly proud of her for playing baseball and being the only girl in the league. And it was a great practice, and the coaches are so supportive, and they were clearly going to be on her side and helping her with the social dynamics as well as with baseball skills. And I was really looking forward to seeing her play this year. And I can tell you that losing the chance to see my child grow and challenge herself and become a stronger version of herself is a huge thing. And it's not even the thing that I lost that was the most difficult. It's certainly not on the level of losing a loved one, losing a job, losing an income. But no matter who we are, no matter where we are in this country, we've lost something over the last few months. And the question is, how are we going to move forward together? And the answer, I think, for us at One America is we're going to move forward together by recognizing that loss, that pain, that grief in each other, even if it's a very different manifestation of it, even if what we're seeing is very different in Brooklyn than it is in Montana, and realizing that we have a lot to rebuild in this country and that we have to rebuild it together. What we've seen over the last few weeks is not a separation from that or different from that. It's just another manifestation of it. We had an African-American board member, Leslie Copeland Toon, on our sort of weekly podcast on Friday, and she said that she shouldn't have to go into intercessionary prayer every time her college-age son leaves the house. And that in this season, that pain, the pain that the African-American community feels is what we've been focusing on, and rightly so. And I think it's part of a larger picture of this country and the pain that, so many people feel right now, and how we have to address all of that pain if we're going to move forward and build a better country together. So that's my question for all of you, is how do we step into other people's experiences, lives, into their pain? How do we recognize that we have very different experiences over the last few months from each other? And some have been much harder than others, but all of them are important. And how do we move forward together coming out of that experience?
The honest question, do we even really want to? The choice? Because I think there's probably going to be so much we disagree on. Even, you know, I was even thinking as I was hearing you talk, Andrew, even the tension between the narrative of recovering what was lost. You know, I don't even know if we can agree on that. Because on one side you have, yeah, we're trying to get back on track to the, I guess, the vision that was cast in the Declaration of Independence, right? But for so many people, I think that their narrative is like, what are you talking about recovering what was lost? It was never there, you know? So even that, like, there's so much space between us. And I think to any hope of kind of narrowing that gap, narrowing the spaces between us would, I think, begin with actually, yeah, do I actually want to? Because as Marissa is saying, that I don't, the things that are being asked of us to lay down even our narratives and the way things that we see things being and our reality, to lay even that down, that is not a small price.
Well, but I will say though, there's something about the Christian narrative about even just modeling Jesus, right? The like coming into the space of another, coming into the life of another, someone in need, someone hurting and pain, giving of yourself so that life can come forth, right? That's the Jesus narrative all day. And I think, you know, we talk as Christians about, you know, do you have the bracelet? Like, what would Jesus do? We're gonna walk like Jesus walked. Can we model that? I mean, if you decide in this moment that you kind of don't want to take up your neighbor's burdens, whoever your neighbor is, I mean, I don't know if you can come out of this moment saying that and really be at the same time saying, like, I want to live like Jesus lived. That might sound harsh, but isn't this our moment? I mean, because the pain that we're talking about, this isn't new pain. This is generational pain. People have, you know, all sorts of people have been afraid of the other here on this land for a long time. Andrew, in the work that you guys are doing, how are you finding, I guess, people's hearts? I mean, I know people that come to you are already kind of like wanting to be with other people, but are you getting a sense sort of from the larger world out there? Are people wanting to be together more? Is there more of a shrinking back? What are you seeing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, we have designed our programs to really reach beyond the folks who just already want to be part of this stuff. So we are actually, you know, in community with a lot of people who previously had maybe felt very polarized from another community and are now in relationship with that community. I think that people are being bombarded by incessant, divisive rhetoric of one kind or another, of fear, of just stress from the news, blaring headlines constantly. And I think what they want in the sort of the deepest longings is to be together, but to do it in a way that's real. And you can't do that if you just try to paper over and pretend like there's not racism or there's not these other problems. I think that the vast majority of Americans are not where Twitter is at. They're not where the cable news and talk show hosts are at. They want justice. They want what's right. They want to live their values, but they also want to move forward. And they realize we don't have a choice. To answer your question, Marissa, I agree with you 100%. And also, we don't have a choice. Unless you have enough money and a passport to go move to another country, how bad do we want it? It almost doesn't matter because we don't have a choice. There's no shortcut. We're not going to draw, you know, lines around a map and say, okay, those people stay over here, right? That's called an internment camp. So there's no other option other than to find a way to move forward together. And that's going to be hard. And a lot of people aren't going to enjoy it, but there's no other option.
I totally agree. It's been fun listening to you guys just with all the wisdom. And I totally agree. I get this huge image of, you know, I do think this moment is causing larger disparity, whether that's in like emotional disparity of how, you know, wealth disparity with the pandemic, so many different ways. And I think at some level, I kind of think a disparity of almost like a wave that catches some people and leaves some people behind. I think it's incumbent on a person to not just take like the natural inertia down the wave, but to actually try your hardest to kind of get off the wave. I know it's a weird picture, but I think that's like, but it takes active work to do that, right? If you just kind of sit in place, you will get carried down a wave. But if you actually like, you have to actively work to get off of it. And I think that's just one kind of imagery of like, how do we actively work to do that? Not necessarily that everything has to be perfectly equal lined up, but you're actively attempting to not just make it a larger and larger gap, if that makes sense. Basically, how do you make sure that the like inertia and momentum and natural kind of splitting that does happen in moments like this doesn't carry you away farther, but you're kind of actively resisting it in a small way, local way, neighborhood way?
I love it back to Andrew's original question, because it feels like, as we've sort of chewed on this right now, how do we move forward? It feels like what a choice towards hard intentionality. The Jesus way would be to like intentionally go all out at the loving neighbor thing, regardless of how they feel about you, because there's the power in that love and because it reflects something more than you. I think we're all going to have to pray for that, for ourselves, for each other, for the world, because that's not a human thing. That's not normal. Yeah. But I thank you for this, Andrew, because it might seem repetitive to all of us. It might seem like, oh, there they are again, talking about that togetherness thing. But I think we all know there's kind of no other way out of this. Like you said, Andrew, all of the others, they ain't going anywhere. So either we're going to go through or we're going to check out. But I thank you for that. That was great. And again, for those of you who stick around with us pretty regularly, you know that we continue diving deeper into conversations like this, into themes that we think have been around for a long, long time, that if we revisit those and think about them through the lens of sort of how we're made to be, how we're built to be, how we're wired to be, both individually and with each other, that this could really be a moment for awakening. Our book that is coming out in at the end of July, July 28th, American Awakening. We invite you to get it wherever you get all the amazing books in the world. You can get it at Amazon, you can get it at Walmart.com, you can get it at a whole bunch of other retailers. But we invite you to get the book, read along with us. We're going to be on chapter 3 this week, talking about less being more. And again, we're at a moment in our culture, in our nation, in our world where we're having to deal with less, less time with people, less freedom, less money. You know, one thing we may have more than ever is time, unfortunately, but could also be very fortunate for you. I'm going to tease that a little. Get the book, read along with us. This is for the moment. Well, all right, friends, before we get to the last music of the day, I want to do a movie line today. Jeff, I don't know if you had time to see this, but I'd love to toss this up for us. This is a good
great
one.
Movie today. I love Apple. I've read all the Jobs biographies, all that stuff. So this was a great choice and a great movie, very compelling and a good line. So yeah, without further ado, a line from, what is it just called? Jobs, right? Technically, yeah, there you go.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
There you go. How are we going to move forward? We're all going to rise up in our own individual craziness, which can be seen as genius. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna keep pushing things forward. We're going to keep pushing things forward. Yeah. Don't be afraid of the label of the radical one or the one who keeps digging, keeps pushing, keeps wanting us to go forward. I think we all need to rise up in that in this moment. Thank you for that, Steve Jobs. And thank you for that, Jeff. So yeah, our closing music today, guys, again, like I said, the team is here in Nashville. We've got a really big really big musical event called Better Together. Again, in this moment, again, if you know this show, you know, we got a few things that we talk about all the time. God's for you. God loves you. And again, we need each other. We're better together. And so for this show that we've been working on, quite honestly, Calvin, what, like 18 months, we've been trying to put a show together with folks, with Christian folks from all different styles of music on one stage, who most people would think normally wouldn't be together. We've been trying to get them together for 18 months, and people told us it wouldn't happen. They told us people wouldn't take the stage together. They told us all sorts of things. Well, guess what? Corona happened, and the way things are imploded, our way of life is totally different. And now guess what? We can get a bunch of people together on stage. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to share just some brief clips, some teasers of some musicians that some, a lot of people know, some are up and comers. They're standing in all sorts of different spaces, but they are coming together because they believe in the American Awakening vision, and they want to cast their musical talent in with our message. They're standing with this in this moment. There's more. So could you run the New Respects clip? That's the New Respects, up and coming group.
Awesome.
Out of Nashville. They've made some great music, and there's more to come. Excited to see them. All right, we got our next player, Crowder.
So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. Oh, I'm broken. Lift up your face.
The worship band at church always sort of sang that song. I never really knew who sang it. It's Crowder. He's got a whole bunch of hits, and I guess he crosses a lot of different genres. So I'm excited to see what he does. So I'm going to play only two more. Lecrae. Lecrae is a name that a whole bunch of us know. He's been around for a while. He's had some amazing hits, Grammy winners. Let's run a clip of Lecrae if you don't know.
Maybe I don't really know what living is. Is it love? If it was, am I living it? Do I live in it? So astounding. Love is an ocean. You can drown me. The sweet embrace, the lovely taste. I taste and see. I'm under grace, the place to be. It means I'll never need an umbrella. I'm cool in the cold, in the hot weather. Whether or never I ever understand, I'm a man in the hands of great plans. I stand with faith and a life I never known to touch. And still I saw my clutch, but I'm like, what's the dream of? What's the hope in? What's the doubt for? Live to no end. This is living. The life I've been given is a gift. If I'm a living, I'm a living to death. So what's the dream of? What's the hope in? What's the doubt for? And live to no end. This is living.
That was Lecrae on Hillsong Young and Free. This is Living Now. Cray's been around a while. Hillsong's been around a while. He has a lot of great hits. Hope you tune in for that. And the last one I'm going to hit today for King and Country. They've been called Australia's Coldplay. I don't know if they love that, but you know what? I love Coldplay in America, and I love King and Country too. But their latest hit, Together, sort of embodies all of what we've been talking about. So we're excited to see them do that. Play that clip.
Together.
That was together, just dropped during the time of Corona, hence the video showing all sorts of people what they've been missing, what they've been looking for. We have way more artists than that, but I just wanted to give you guys a bit of a taste. This is a moment that we're in. I think we all know it's a moment, and it's a moment that's brought a lot of people together who might not normally come together. We are, in fact, better together. And I'm excited that a good chunk of our team is here. Not everybody's here. Unfortunately, JBJ and Andrew are not in town, but I can't wait till we're with you again. But yeah, guys, audiences out there all over the globe, stay tuned. We're going to be coming to you with that show. You'll be able to join us all and those artists, and we'll hear from them and what they've been going through in this moment. We'll talk more about American Awakening and what more you'll see from us soon. And guys, I hope you all are going to have a fantastic day out there. We know it's rough. But God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's never left us or forsaken us. He's for us. He's gone ahead of us. We can get through this moment, I promise you. And not only can we get through it with God, but the way God intended, I think we're going to get through it together. So have a great week. We'll see you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Signs of Life is produced by American Awakening, a campaign for the soul of America committed to slaying the giant of death and despair in this American moment. Signs of Life is made up of Jefferson Bethke, Dan Hazeltine, Josh Jacob, John Kingston, Joel Searby, Calvin Lee, Christian Palacios, Marina Pappas, Andy Peterson, and me, Marissa Prince. The show is produced from our headquarters in Lexington, Massachusetts, and you can learn a whole lot more about the movement by visiting our website, AmericanAwakening.us.
Relevant Podcast Network.